Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading the Rantoul Press for the week of June 24th. Here's some news from Rantoul. Study eyes RCS student safety. Getting to and from school is not always easy or safe for some students in Rantoul Public Schools. Recommendations from a regional planning commission study would seek to rectify some of those issues. Among the safety problems, according to transportation planner Gabe Lewis, are aggressive drivers, students' bikes being stolen from home, neighborhood, or school, heavy traffic on tracks such as US 136, Maplewood Drive, and US 45, and long walks to school for some students. Others have personal safety concerns or sibling or family influences, Lewis told the Rantoul City Schools Board. Others find the sidewalks or roads in bad condition. Some want streetlights for overcast or dark winter days. The study's findings included 5 high-priority engineering recommendations that included installing sidewalks or improving the condition of existing ones, installing pedestrian countdown signals at intersections, installing permanent vehicular speed signs, and upgrading curb ramps to meet Americans with Disabilities Act compliance. Other recommendations include installing more bike lanes, improving signage for pedestrians, and making Broadmeadow Road a one-way street westbound for the start and end of the school day. It also recommended installing a sidewalk beside the street. We have identified locations where, if parents don't live near the school, parents can leave their kids and let them walk the rest of the way or walk with them so they get some exercise, Lewis said. We have looked at things like sidewalks, speed limits, crossing guard location, crosswalks, and pedestrian signs. At East Lawn Elementary, cars pick up and drop off students on the north side of the building, and buses do the same on the south side. Pedestrians and bicyclers have to cross Maplewood Drive, where a crossing guard is stationed, to reach the school. RPC recommended the Village of Rantoul conduct a safety study on Maplewood. At Northview Elementary, cars can go almost anywhere, Lewis said. They can enter on the southwest side and leave on the northwest side or on the east side on Illinois Drive. Buses come in the southwest side and exit on the northwest side. Lewis said pedestrians and bicyclists have challenges reaching the school and need to be led by a teacher to the west to get across Sheldon Street. To the east, there is only a pedestrian lane and no sidewalk. The study recommended sidewalks on Illinois Drive. We know there's a path being built on the east side of the property to get to the rail trail, Lewis said. We want to close the front driveway to cars so kids can walk or bike and exit the building safely. A bus can enter on the southwest side and cars on the northwest side. A park and walk site was proposed at the Nazarene Church, south of Northview. Students can use Sheldon Street, or a sidewalk could be built from the south part of the school property to the church parking lot. At Pleasant Acres, all cars and buses enter the grounds from Short Street. Cars proceed to the north side of the building and buses to the south. Walkers from the north use Harper Drive, where there is a pedestrian lane. A cut-through sidewalk is located between 2 houses to reach the school. From the south, there is a sidewalk located along a farm field, which RPC recommended widening from 4 feet to 8 feet and extending it to Veterans Parkway. Lewis said there is a lack of sidewalks in the area. The study recommended adding a crossing guard at the Perimeter Road Fairway Drive intersection. Potential park and walk sites for Pleasant Acres are Cultivators Latino Center and New Light Baptist Church. Other recommendations: distribute bike education pamphlets and a parent letter yearly concerning traffic safety rules. Distribute safe walking route maps and traffic circulation maps. Establish a bike education curriculum and host a bike rodeo at the schools. Also, hold school walkathons and bike to school day in May and October and have a walk to school day. A medium priority recommendation was to have a frequent walker club that allows students to participate, even if they don't live close to school. A punch card system or a foot token system could be used. The school could partner with local businesses and prizes awarded to students who reach goals. The study recommends early dismissal for walkers and bicyclists, encourages snow removal so pedestrians can more easily get to school. One idea to promote walking or biking to school is to have walking school buses or bike trains. The idea would be to develop a route with a number of students participating, led by an adult or a responsible high school student. Lewis said the Illinois Department of Transportation is expected to take safe routes to school grant applications in the fall. RCS would stand a greater chance of grant approval if it has approved its safe routes to school plans by then. In other business, Superintendent Michelle Ramage announced RCS had received a United Way grant of $140,000 over a two-year period for the Boys and Girls Club after-school program at Pleasant Acres. RCS had requested additional funding to also include the program at another school, but was not awarded the money. A $500 Champaign County Audubon Society grant was awarded to Rianne Delgadillo, behavioral manager at Broadmeadow, for a community garden. A $4,000 Fuel Up to Play 60 grant was awarded to Pleasant Acres for physical education activities, including an iMove club at recess, farm-to-table activities, promotion of healthy activities, and money for incentives and events. The board also heard a presentation by J.W. Eater Principal Dr. Scott Woods and teacher Carissa Culbertson on the 2021 Professional Evaluation Plan. The board approved increasing the pay of the behavioral coach by 60 cents an hour, so the pay level takes into account a master's degree. The board approved a memorandum of understanding on how stipends are paid for extracurricular sports and clubs in the event they can't be held for such things as a pandemic. Pay will be prorated. The board added the position of technology support technician. The salary for the first year will be paid from a CARES grant. Ramage reminded the board a Carl RV mobile and eight exam room unit will be available from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. July 31st at J.W. Eater. For the third time in 2 days, Rantoul police responded to reports of shots fired in town on Monday. An occupied home in the 1600 block of Keesler Drive was struck by gunfire. There were no reported injuries. The home was occupied by 8 adults and 3 children. Police responded to the call at 11:49 p.m. They recovered numerous fired projectiles at the scene. Detectives continue to investigate the incident and are reviewing surveillance video from the area. There is currently no suspect information available. Also on Monday, a 17-year-old male was struck in the leg by a bullet in the 1600 block of Harper Drive. He was taken by ambulance for treatment at Carl Hospital, Urbana. On Sunday, several shots were fired at an occupied home in the 1300 block of Abram Drive. No one was injured in the residence, which included a mother and her 3 daughters. Anyone having information concerning any of the incidents is encouraged to contact Rantoul Police Detectives at 217-892-2103. Callers may also remain anonymous by contacting Champaign County Crime Stoppers at 217-373-TIPS or by utilizing the P3 TIPS application on a cellular phone. Swimming pool, forum, and other village services to open. The Hap Parker Aquatic Center will open at 11 a.m. Saturday, June 27th. Pool hours this year will be noon to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, and 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, with the first hour reserved for annual pass holders. Swim lessons, early morning swim, and water aerobics will begin July 6th. Family nights will once again be held on Wednesdays beginning July 8th. Individual annual passes and family annual passes will be for sale. Daily admission prices will be charged to those without a pass. The village has implemented specific rules and guidelines in an effort to reduce the possible transmission of COVID-19 and will be following all Center for Disease Control and Illinois Department of Public Health recommendations. Forum Fitness Center. The Forum Fitness Center shall open Monday, June 29th at regular operating hours. While some equipment may be restricted during Phase 4, all areas of the forum shall be open with access to each type of fitness equipment previously present. Forum hours will be 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday. Classes will also be resuming, but for specific dates on when, contact the Recreation Department. Youth League. While Little League teams have been practicing and learning fundamentals of the game throughout these past few weeks, they will put those new skills to the test when regularly scheduled games begin June 29th. Spectators will be allowed, but must practice appropriate social distancing, and spectators will be asked to separate themselves around the field. Bleacher seating will not be allowed, and all are encouraged to bring their own lawn seats. Seating around the fields will be allowed as long as chairs are placed 6 feet apart from family to family. Recreational day camps, including new camps offered this year, will continue this summer as well. All park facilities, including playgrounds, courts, and shelters, will be opening beginning June 26th. No more than 50 people are allowed on each at any one time. Also, the Rantoul Municipal Building will reopen July 6th for all services except utilities. Only the main entrance on the west side will be open for use by the general public, but utility payments will not yet be allowed inside. Payments can still be made using the Dropbox, can be mailed, or use the online service. Setting up a new service can be done by appointment only, and those wishing to do so can call 892-6832. Disconnection of services for those who fail to make their utility payments will begin August 1st. In addition to reopening the Village Hall July 6th, contractors or anyone wishing to speak to the Building Safety Department or Code Enforcement should now use the north entrance. Upon entering the north doors to the building, there is now a service window that will allow anyone needing the services of the Building Safety Department or Code Enforcement to speak with a representative. Anyone entering Village Hall will be required to use hand sanitizer as they enter, and masks will be provided. All precautions will be used to reduce the possible transmission of COVID-19 among staff and guests, and all are still encouraged to do as much communication with village staff by means other than face-to-face visits. Black Lives Matter Peace Rally March planned in Rantoul. A number of speakers, food, and musical entertainment are scheduled for a Rantoul Black Lives Matter Peace Rally March. The event kicks off at 2 p.m. Sunday, June 28th, at the police station and will head south towards Wabash Park. Herb Burnett's Not On My Watch organization will co-sponsor the rally march. He said 8 to 10 speakers will talk, including a couple of hometown favorites like James Harden, a local high school graduate, and Air Force veteran. He said Police Chief Tony Brown will also be among the speakers, and I will extend an invitation for the city manager, Scott Eisenhower, and the mayor, Chuck Smith, as well as a couple of coaches. There will be free food and drink. Speakers will be present at the park as well as possibly at some of the intersections en route. Burnett said Rantoul can't let other area communities such as Paxton, St. Joseph, Gibson City, and Monticello have such events while Rantoul does not. I kind of waited 2 to 3 weeks to see if any would be held, and when no one stepped forward, he decided to. Local resident Marquez Reed is the other co-organizer. It will be a peaceful rally, and at the same time, hopefully we can bring the town out, Burnett said. I have been told when the sports programs are doing good, the people come out. I guarantee the basketball program will not be the same as last year, said Burnett, who is one of the new coaches for the high school program. Burnett is a leader in the Black community. In addition to owning a clothing store and coaching, he will be student teaching for a half a semester at both J.W. Eater Junior High School and Broadmeadow Elementary. From June 18th, the COVID-19 update. For the second day in a row, there's been another COVID-19 death in Champaign County, according to the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. The 11th person to die was a man in his 70s with underlying health conditions, Champaign-Urbana Public Health District Administrator Julie Pride reported. The 10th Champaign County death, announced Wednesday, was a man in his 40s. Chumley. English Professor Stewart's novel, Storm, An Interesting Read. By Kenny Chumley, Rantoul Press columnist. I recently finished a story I'd like to tell about. In 1941, during the dark days of Dunkirk, George Stewart, an English professor at the University of California, Berkeley, wrote a novel named Storm. It's a fascinating tale of the genesis and life of a Pacific storm over a period of 12 days. What began as a small low-pressure area in Siberia moved down over China and into the Pacific Ocean, then made its way to the west coast of California, where it unleashed devastating rain and snow from San Francisco into Nevada. Not only does Stewart make the meteorology interesting, but woven into the weather are accounts of how the highway department, airlines, train system, telephone system, and electrical and flood control systems were affected by the weather. The book is great reading on its own merits, but I'd like to mention two adjuvants to it that I found interesting. First, at the time the book was written, the airline service was in its infancy, and air traffic controllers often had difficulty determining whether it was safe for a commercial airliner to fly. To make the decision, controllers had a checklist they used based on a line from Psalm 148. Many are familiar with the line because it appears in the popular church hymn, Hallelujah, Praise Jehovah. The line or lyric goes, "From the earth, O praise Jehovah, all ye floods, ye dragons all, fire and hail and snow and vapors, stormy winds that hear his call." Controllers would check along the planned route using this line as a mnemonic device for dangerous conditions. Fire was lightning, hail and snow were icing, vapors were fog, and stormy winds were turbulence. Second, in an obscure four-volume set called Manual in Meteorology, Stewart read of a meteorologist who thought storms so personal that he gave them feminine names. Stewart liked this idea, and in his novel he has a junior meteorologist give a name to the storm that is the central focus of the story. Because of Stewart's book, military meteorologists who read it began giving feminine names to Pacific and Atlantic typhoons and hurricanes, a practice that was formally adopted by the U.S. Weather Service in 1945. For example, Hurricane Camille and Katrina. In 1950, Frederick Lerner and Alan J. Lowe wrote a play about the California Gold Rush. In it, there's a scene where a storm hammers the mining region. They wrote a song to tell about the storm, and the name they chose for it is the name Stewart used in his novel. Thus, in the Broadway play Paint Your Wagon is the wonderful song they call the Wind Mariah. In his book, Stewart spelled the name M-A-R-I-A, but in the introduction he explained that the name should be pronounced in the old-fashioned English and American way, rather than with the soft Spanish pronunciation. So put the accent on the second syllable, he said, and pronounce it rye. Lerner and Lowe spelled it the way Stewart wanted it pronounced. And from Jim Nolan, a cry for help, but what kind of help? In a recent column, I averred that the George Floyd death and protests in reaction represented a classic case of the powerful us versus them syndrome that is baked into the human brain. Racism is a subset of this syndrome. Floyd's brother gave testimony this past week to Congress that was in effect a cry for help for the thems of our society. But what kind of help, and will it really help? Try as we might and must, racism is not going to be erased in short order, though I believe significant progress has been made since the 1960s. The percentage of blacks earning college degrees has quadrupled, and rigid housing segregation barriers have largely been torn down. As a white country boy, I am obviously no expert on this topic, yet I am not clueless. As an aide to Governor Jim Thompson, and in the 1980s, I was sent to impoverished, mostly African-American, East St. Louis for 3 weeks to investigate what level of vitality and capacity existed by which to start a renewal. Not much, I found. The poverty I saw in East St. Louis was not that of money, but a poverty of spirit, capacity, hope, and largely, not in all cases, dysfunctional families. For generations now, neighborhoods without hope have been breeding grounds for gangs. The gangs serve social purposes not all that different in many ways from those of my college fraternity of yore. We all seek companionship, brotherhood, a sense of belonging, mutual support, social status, success. Based on their difficult experiences with gangs in desperate neighborhoods, police, of whatever color, tend to develop, or so I think, us versus them attitudes towards gangs. The result is frustration, exasperation, anger toward the miscreants, and as we have seen, brutality at times. I returned this past year to East St. Louis to be on a panel to discuss urban-rural similarities. Since my time in the town in the early 1980s, the city has shrunk from 55,000 to 26,000, fewer than half as many residents. With big swaths of vacant land in the heart of town, the city gave the impression of abandonment. Because housing segregation had diminished since I was last in the city, apparently those who could have moved out, leaving the remainder with even less community leadership. How to respond to the cries for help for desperate communities like East St. Louis? The us's, probably including you and me, are willing to spend money on the them's, out of our church upbringing to support the poor, especially if there is also benefit for the us's. For example, increasing the educational achievement of the them's will benefit the whole of our economy. But money isn't primarily the issue. The issue is dysfunction and subcultures. I define culture as distinct patterns of behavior. The East St. Louis School District spent $16,000 per student in 2019. Just 2% of high schoolers at East St. Louis were proficient in math in 2019. None exceeded proficiency. That means 98% of all students were basically failing math. In contrast, near me, the mostly white, Asian, American Dunlap School District, suburban Peoria, spends $12,000 per pupil. 40% of Dunlap students were proficient in math, 20% exceeded proficiency, way, way above state averages. So how do we transform underperforming subcultures into achievers? Wealthy whites would spend big money if they believed transformation could happen. Cultures can change. For example, teen births in the U.S. are down from 61.8 per 1,000 females age 15 to 19 in 1990 to just 17.4 in 2018, the lowest ever recorded. Talk about an incredibly positive change in behavior patterns. Key factors in the trend appear to be less sex, use of more effective contraception, and more information about pregnancy prevention. Another tack would be to take youngsters out of toxic subcultures. I know a sharp, hard-working African-American mother who moved her four kids out of the wrong side of Peoria to a rural community where they all seem to be thriving and achieving. I have another idea, the Oriental Academy of Child Development. As a condition of any welfare programs from which they benefit, parents would be required to attend classes taught by Korean and Chinese families on how to prepare your child for success. Many African-American families might be understandably offended about learning of child development from whites, so why not learn from other cultures of color, which are achieving even more than our dominant Caucasian culture? Indeed, white parents might benefit as well. Cockamamie? Mamie. Why not try pilot projects to see? We must think outside the box, or little if anything will change. Oh, sure, we can throw more money at the problem. That's easy, but it apparently wouldn't solve anything. For many years, Jim Nolan was a senior fellow and political science professor at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. He has worked for three unindicted governors and published a weekly newspaper in central Illinois. We'll turn now to the death notices for the week. Harold D. Hansen, Jr., 89, of Champaign, was surrounded by his family when he went to be with the Lord on the evening of Monday, June 8th, at his home. Private services were held in a burial at Elmwood Cemetery, Rantoul. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Lux Memorial Chapel, Rantoul, is handling the arrangements. Jolaine Sass, age 76, completed her earthly journey on 19 June 2020 at home after a long battle with Alzheimer's and in recent years combined with cancer. Services were held at Our Redeemer Lutheran with School in Delavan, Wisconsin, with the Reverend Robert Pickman officiating. A Christian graveside committal service took place at American Lutheran Church, Eden Park Cemetery in Rantoul, with Reverend Matt Bonfleth officiating. A celebration of life for Jolaine may be held at the one-year anniversary. In lieu of flowers, memorials, if desired, may be made to Our Redeemer Lutheran Church with School Scholarship Fund in Delavan, Wisconsin, or charity of your choice. Special thanks to the hospice care team of Aurora at Home for the lender loving care they provided for Jo during her greatest time of need. Max A. Sass and Sons Funeral and Cremation Services assisted the family. This concludes the reading of the death notices for the week, and now we'll return and finish with local news and opinion. And from Scott Reeder, sore losers could undermine the election process. From Springfield, democracies have little tolerance for sore losers. I remember decades ago when a candidate for Moline mayor was defeated. I called him on election night. He was angry and his words were slurred. I could hear the clink of glasses in the background. He said Moline was an awful town and they didn't deserve him as mayor. I typed up the quote and sent it over to the city desk. It was spiked. No one wants to hear from a sore loser on election night. It is never pretty. Perhaps the most infamous sore loser speech of the 20th century was when Richard Nixon lost the California gubernatorial race. Appearing before 100 reporters at the Beverly Hilton Hotel, Nixon lashed out at the media saying, "You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore because, gentlemen, this is my last press conference." Nixon, of course, went on to win the presidency in 1968. But for the most part, losing candidates for major offices try to at least appear magnanimous. If they can't say anything nice about their opponent, they extol the system and express their support for it. A good example is Governor Pat Quinn's 2014 concession speech to Bruce Rauner. "It's clear we do not have enough votes to win the election," Quinn said at the news conference. "Therefore, we respect the result, we respect what the voters said yesterday, and I look forward to working with the new administration." I was sitting in the audience of reporters when he made that statement. I couldn't help but think he must really dislike Rauner. He didn't even utter his name. But Quinn loved Illinois enough not to undermine its democratic institutions by criticizing the voters or making unwarranted allegations about the system. I'm not so sure the current occupant of the Oval Office would be so gracious in defeat. Love him or hate him, one has to admit that Donald Trump is a political brawler. Some folks love his unfiltered, unscripted, uncouth style, others don't. One thing is certain, he is unlike any president the nation has ever had in the past century, and there is the rub. The usual norms of political decorum are anathema to him. This is the fellow who led his followers in chants of "lock her up" during the 2016 race against Hillary Clinton. After losing the popular vote, but winning the Electoral College, he claimed millions of votes were cast fraudulently by illegal aliens and that he really won the popular vote. We are still waiting for the proof of this assertion, and I anticipate it will continue to be a really long wait. But this election will be different. For one thing, the process of casting votes is already being politicized, and it's anticipated that record numbers of people will vote by mail. For example, here in Illinois, Governor J.B. Pritzker recently signed legislation to encourage mail-in ballots by sending applications to anyone who voted by mail in 2018, 19, or in this year's primary. On May 26, Trump tweeted, "There is no way, zero, that mail-in ballots will be anything less than substantially fraudulent. Mailboxes will be robbed, ballots will be forged, and even illegally printed out and fraudulently signed." Ron Michelson, who led the Illinois Board of Elections under Republican administrations from 1976 until 2003, says there is little evidence to support widespread voter fraud connected with mail-in ballots. Colorado, Hawaii, Oregon, Washington, and Utah conduct their elections entirely by mail and have had little to no problem with fraud. For this complete editorial, see the print edition of the Rantoul Press for this week. This has been Tamara reading the Rantoul Press, and I hope to read with you again soon. Have a great day.